Tonight, a sitting United States senator accused. A woman claims Al Franken groped her on tour for the troops and has a photograph to prove it. Franken now apologizing. Will he be forced from the Senate? Also tonight, a woman accusing Roy Moore of sexual misconduct. Her first television interview.
He had power over me. He had me in a position where I couldn't do nothing. And I didn't want it.
Her story is a brand new poll from Alabama shows more support slipping. News tonight about your taxes. Republicans passed their sweeping plan in the House. Can it pass in the Senate? And what will it mean for how much you pay? All-out manhunt for a killer tonight after a police detective, a father of five, is fatally gunned down. And if you build it, they will come. That's what they're praying for at the nation's newest mega museum.
Could we make the Bible really cool? And so that's what we're about.
Hoping the faithful will flock to see it.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening and thank you for being here. The eye-opening list of powerful men outed for sexual misconduct now includes a sitting U.S. Senator, Minnesota Democrat Al Franken, a former comedian, admitting tonight there was nothing funny about how he sexually humiliated a former model and fellow performer during a 2006 USO tour for troops in the Middle East. Her story backed by this photo of Franken grinning and mugging for the camera at her expense.
Nothing like that is ever funny. I mean, is it funny if he does that to your sister or your daughter or your wife?
The woman, now a Los Angeles radio host, told her story today, and our Casey Hunt has much more.
It happened so fast, and he just mashed his lips against my face, and he stuck his tongue in my mouth so fast.
Radio host Leanne tweeted today saying, "Me too," accusing Democratic Senator Al Franken of kissing and groping her against her will.
I almost punched him, because every time I see him now, like, my hands clench into fists.
She says it happened in 2006, before he was a senator and while she worked as a model, when they were both on tour overseas with the USO.
I guess I've always wondered if I had any talent.
Oh, you've got talent.
Acting talent, Al.
They remember the tour differently.
I was kind of a co-host with a beautiful woman named Leanne Tweeden.
All I can remember is that his lips were really wet and it was slimy. In my mind, I called him fish lips the rest of the trip.
Tweeden releasing this photograph. This morning, Franken first released a short statement saying, quote, "It was clearly intended to be funny." But later, in a second, longer statement, saying he was sorry and felt ashamed, writing, quote, "I don't know what was in my head when I took that picture, and it doesn't matter. There's no excuse."
The apology? Sure, I accept it. Yes. I mean, people make mistakes.
Franken also asked the Senate Ethics Committee to investigate his conduct.
Sexual harassment is inappropriate in every circumstance, in every way, whomever is involved.
I think that it has to be investigated, and no one gets a pass.
I have a Me Too story to share.
Leanne Tweeden says Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who told her own story about sexual harassment in Congress, inspired her to speak out now.
I mean, look, I was afraid to speak out 11 years ago. I wanted to say something, and there were people around me who said, "Oh my God, you will get annihilated, and you will never work in this town again." And I was afraid of that.
Tonight, leaders in both parties are calling for an ethics committee investigation. An investigation like that could lead to the expulsion of a U.S. senator, but it's extremely rare. The last time it happened was way back in the 1860s. Lester.
Casey Hunt on Capitol Hill tonight. Thank you. And on the other side of the aisle, new signs that sexual misconduct allegations against Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore may be taking a toll. A new poll now shows Moore trailing his Democratic rival by 8 points among likely voters. But Moore remains defiant, speaking out today surrounded by some of his strongest supporters, religious conservatives, even as more women come forward. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has the latest.
Today, Roy Moore refused to answer specific questions about the latest allegations against him.
They're not only untrue, but they have no evidence to support them.
But he vowed to stay in the race, flanked by more than a dozen religious leaders from across the country.
This is an effort by Mitch McConnell and his cronies to steal this election from the people of Alabama, and they will not stand for it.
This as more women are coming forward to accuse Moore of unwanted advances, ranging from inappropriate flirting to sexual assault.
I was in shock, and I was so humiliated and sickening.
Tina Johnson says Moore groped her at his law office in 1991 when she was 28 and trying to settle a child custody case.
When I got up and went out, he grabbed my behind. He had power over me. He had me in a position where I couldn't do nothing, and I didn't want it. I was vulnerable, and he took advantage of that, and he knew it.
Becky Gray, then 22, says she worked at the mall in Gadsden, Alabama. She says she reported Moore to her manager when he kept asking her out.
It always seemed a little creepy to me because he was so much older, and why would someone that age be hanging out at the mall?
Gina Richardson tells the Washington Post she was a high school senior when a 30-year-old Moore called her school and had her pulled out of math class to the principal's office, where she says he asked her out. Days later, she told the paper a date ended with an unwanted, forceful kiss. The White House says if the claims are true, Moore should drop out.
The president believes that these allegations are very troubling and should be taken seriously, and he thinks that the people of Alabama should make the decision on who their next senator should be.
Moore's supporters are digging in.
This media and you people are sick, and you desperately need the Jesus that he knows, but you're a disgrace.
Despite allegations now from at least 9 women, the Alabama GOP is sticking by Moore, breaking ranks with the national party. The governor here says a special election will go on as planned on December 12th. Lester?
Gabe Gutierrez in Alabama tonight. Thanks. And now to those big developments in Washington concerning your taxes and how much you will pay. House Republicans today passed their version of a sweeping tax plan. It's now the Senate's turn to pass their own plan, where the road ahead is much more uncertain. And the question everyone is asking is, how will it affect how much I pay? NBC's Kristen Welker has details.
Celebration on the House floor after Republicans passed a bill that would cut taxes by more than $1.4 trillion over 10 years, slash the corporate tax rate to 20% from 35, and simplify the number of tax brackets.
It's about giving people more take-home pay. It's about raising wages.
Today, President Trump was on Capitol Hill before the vote to rally the House. Behind the scenes, he's also focused on the Senate, where tax reform faces the highest hurdle after Republicans inserted a surprise provision to repeal the Obamacare individual mandate. Tonight, another obstacle. The Joint Committee on Taxation estimated the Senate bill would raise the average tax rate for those making between $10,000 and $30,000 in 2021 and on all income groups making under $75,000 in 2027. The leading Republican on the Finance Committee, Orrin Hatch, calling the findings misleading. Republican Ron Johnson opposes the bill.
I will work my tail off over the weekend to fix this problem so we can move forward with a pro-growth.
The president has said the GOP tax bill will cost him.
And it's not good for me, believe me.
But according to an NBC News analysis based on Mr. Trump's leaked 2005 tax return, the House bill passed today would save the president more than $20 million, and his heirs could potentially save $1.1 billion.
What they got to try to do is convince most Americans that this is not going to be just a sop to the wealthy, but that's going to help the middle class, and that is going to be a hard sell given what's in this bill.
And tonight, the Russia probe is back in the spotlight, with congressional investigators saying Jared Kushner failed to turn over key documents last month of interest, emails about WikiLeaks and Russia. Kushner's attorney says they've been responsive and will continue to cooperate. Lester.
Kristen Welker at the White House. Thank you, Kristen. Following more than a week of deliberations, a judge today declared a mistrial in Senator Bob Menendez's bribery trial after the jury reported it was deadlocked. Menendez, a New Jersey Democrat, was accused of accepting expensive gifts in exchange for political favors. Prosecutors haven't said whether they will retry him, but the Senate Ethics Committee says it will reopen an inquiry. In Baltimore tonight, police are on the hunt for a killer of one of their own, someone who pointed a gun and shot a homicide detective in the head, killing a beloved father of five. It's another tragic death in a city that has already seen over 300 homicides for the third year in a row. NBC's Tom Costello is there.
In a crime-ridden section of West Baltimore tonight, yet another murder, but this time it's a cop.
We do not know where these shots came from. We have officers in bad locations. Let everybody take cover somewhere, okay?
18-year veteran homicide detective, 43-year-old Sean Suter, a former naval officer, husband, and father of five, shot in the head after approaching a suspect he thought looked suspicious.
We remain dedicated and committed to finding the person who ended such a beautiful life.
For 24 hours, police have canvassed these streets that have been racked by years of violence. 2 weeks ago, an off-duty D.C. police officer who lived here was gunned down.
It makes me sad because I grew up in this all my life, and I just had a child, and I don't want him to go through this.
In the 318 days since the start of the year, Baltimore has recorded a murder on nearly every one of them. It now has one of the highest murder rates in the country, along with St. Louis, Detroit, and New Orleans. Poverty, drugs, and gangs are entrenched here.
I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Again tonight, the Charm City is pleading for peace.
We need to stop the violence.
The mayor here says prosecutors and judges get part of the blame because they repeatedly let violent offenders back out on the streets. And meanwhile, tonight, the city continues to look for the cop killer who took down this father of five. Lester?
Tom Costello in Baltimore tonight. Thank you. There's word this evening from Washington, something you rarely hear these days, a bipartisan deal on guns. Congress is responding quickly to the discovery that the Air Force failed to report records that would have blocked the gunman from buying the rifle he used to kill 26 people at a Texas Baptist church. Our justice correspondent, Pete Williams, has details on the new proposal.
11 days after one of America's worst mass shootings, Sutherland Springs, Texas, is still burying its dead. A procession of hearses carried the nine members of John Holcomb's family, a loss spanning three generations. So many mourners came for Wednesday's funeral that some were turned away.
Couldn't get in to see John, but I've been praying for him ever since it happened.
Three more victims, Joanne Ward and her two children, were remembered at separate services. The discovery that the gunman, Devin Kelly, was able to buy the rifle he used in the shooting because the Air Force failed to report his domestic violence conviction while he was stationed in New Mexico has forged an unusual bipartisan move to shore up the gun background check system. The driving force is a Republican senator from Texas, John Cornyn.
I just can't, in good faith, face another grieving family who's lost their loved one due to a preventable shooting.
The bill would give states more money to improve their reporting of background information to the FBI's databases, and it would set new standards for the military services and other federal agencies to report court-martial convictions, records that would block a gun purchase. Federal officials whose agencies failed to meet new reporting goals would not be eligible for bonus pay. Tonight, the NRA says it supports the bill, which also requires the government to remove inaccurate information in the databases within 60 days if it prevents someone from buying a gun. Lester?
Pete Williams, thank you. Now to an NBC News exclusive revealing the sophistication behind Russia's social media propaganda machine. Tonight, a Russian who worked for one of the alleged nerve centers where lies were created and spread speaks out. NBC's Kelly Kobiea has the story.
Is this it? This is the building?
Yes, 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 of course.
The troll factory.
Yes.
Tonight, a look inside Russia's disinformation campaign from 26-year-old Vitaly Bespalov, one of dozens of 20-year-olds churning out fake stories in what he calls a factory of lies.
Did you create fake accounts?
Yes, he says. Bespalov worked inside Russia's Internet Research Agency for 3 months in late 2014. He'd write up to 20 fake articles a day, spinning the war in Ukraine.
That article would then be posted by a blogger and then be spread by someone in the social media department?
That was one way, he says, or bloggers would write fake posts and he'd quote them in the articles. Facebook told Congress Russian trolls posted 80,000 items from January 2015 to August 2017, reaching more than 20 million in the United States.
These troll farms can produce such a volume of content with hashtags and topics that it distorts what is normal organic conversations.
We tried to ask about the alleged troll factory today.
So what did he say?
Oh, I would rather not know. Swearing.
Ah, We were also told the business moved out over a year ago.
So you believe that this operation was backed by the Kremlin?
Absolutely,
he says. Bespalov also believes it's still up and running. The Kremlin denies it, suggesting reports the factory even existed might be fake. Kelly Kobieya, NBC News, St. Petersburg.
There's a lot more to come here tonight. We'll take you inside the new $500 million museum that brings the Bible to life like you've never seen before, and why some are calling it controversial. We're back now with an inside look at a museum of truly biblical proportions. There is great anticipation over the new Museum of the Bible opening tomorrow in Washington. But amid the excitement, questions are being raised about the museum's message. NBC's Ann Thompson has more.
21st century technology draws people to stories more than 3,000 years old.
See, the most shared verse in South Korea right now, Psalms 27.
The privately funded Museum of the Bible, led by some of the nation's most prominent evangelicals and founded by the Hobby Lobby's Green family.
Do you want this museum to be the Christian version of the Smithsonian?
It's not about a faith tradition, a denomination, or a church. It's about a book. Here's a book that's changed our world.
Museum President Carrie Summers mixes the traditional and the trendy. From 13 fragments of the Dead Sea Scrolls, the oldest copies of biblical text, to Elvis's Bible.
He underlines some text and makes notes.
To a recreation of the Nazareth Jesus walked.
Could we make the Bible really cool? And so that's what we're about.
But some are suspicious of its promise not to proselytize.
It's a private museum. It's not a public museum. And yet it aspires to be a kind of public face of Christianity, I think, in the United States.
We set our own what I call fence posts, certain limits that we don't cross, and we just invite visitors to come and decide if we've done that.
Then there are the artifacts acquired by the Greens. This summer, Hobby Lobby paid a $3 million fine for illegally imported ancient tablets.
Can scholars trust the artifacts that are in this museum?
Well, they can ask the other scholars that are a part of helping us put this museum together.
A test of faith for visitors and the museum. Ann Thompson, NBC News, Washington.
So, ahead tonight, we have an update on that so-called Last Da Vinci auction we told you about a few nights ago. Wait till you hear how much it sold for. The Trump administration has lifted an Obama-era ban on importing trophies from elephants killed in two African countries, Zimbabwe and Zambia, while a spokesman for U.S. Fish and Wildlife says that legal hunting and management programs actually help species survive by, quote, putting much-needed revenue back into conservation. The move has left many animal lovers and animal rights groups outraged. A scary scene caught on camera. Take a look at this new video just released from the moment police officers responded to a gas leak at a duplex back in August when suddenly a massive explosion rocks the complex in Indio, California. Sadly, the blast claimed the life of the homeowner inside. One of the officers was injured. He has since recovered and returned to duty. We told you about this one the other night. We knew the so-called Last Da Vinci would go for big money, but this is record-shattering. A painting of Christ by Leonardo da Vinci sold at auction for $450 million. The painting, called Salvator Mundi, is one of fewer than 20 Da Vinci paintings known to exist, and it's the only one in private hands. When we come back, from recession to revival, an update on a community that struck a chord with a lot of you. Finally tonight, an update on a town in the heartland we first visited nearly a decade ago when it was barely surviving. Now it's enjoying a revival, and a lot of the credit goes to one man who refused to give up on his community. NBC's Kevin Tibbles has tonight's Inspiring America report.
Humboldt, Kansas is getting a facelift. And today, there is hope.
What did it look like here when all these places were closed?
Looking like ghost town.
That's Mayor Nobby Davis in his brand new family restaurant. It's packed at lunch. Nobby knows who to thank for Humboldt's turnaround.
He is the most giving individual that I probably, or anybody around here, could possibly know.
We first met Joe Works 8 years ago. His trailer hitch company was struggling at the height of the recession.
Times were hard, and people do suffer when they lose their jobs. Didn't want that to happen.
But instead of laying people off, he paid them to spruce up the town. B&W Trailer Hitches is now booming. The workers are still here. And that sense of community is still here, too. Joe's bought several abandoned storefronts, breathing new life into the town square.
There's going to be a small cafe go into this building.
Prints, like, hanging on the wall over here.
Elena and Paul Cloutier have come all the way from California to open a shop.
You can feel that people really care about the community here and really want it to succeed.
All of a sudden, Humboldt's hopping.
A small town having a parking problem? That's the greatest thing ever.
This small prairie town open for business. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Humboldt, Kansas.
We're glad you've spent part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Thursday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.